what happens when the reading's so long my computer dies. Thank you, Ingrid. That was beautifully done. And I hope you don't mind that I put that whole story in, because that is our week coming up in contemplation. And the next time you meet together, it will be about the resurrection. So it is a chance, I think, for us to remember that story over this week, and I will have a challenge for you. when I've had a bit of a wobbly week, so I do apologise, but when I was thinking about preparing for today, I was I had some things of my father's. My father has Alzheimer's and he's had a bit of a hard week. My stepmother gave me his... Does anyone remember Rostrum, the old Rostrum speaking program? He was heavily involved in that through his life. And I remember when Dad wasn't there, it was just because he was at Rostrum. But she gave me his certificate when he became a member, and I, somewhat in jest, started to read this saying that you say, which was a bit rude of me, but I got to the last sentence and just stopped, because it said, "I promise not to be silent when I ought to speak." And I thought, oh dear, that's my inheritance, that right there, from Dad. And sometimes when I speak, it's not always at the right time or the right things to say. I have been told to keep my mouth shut at times, but it is one of my unfortunate or fortunate habits. So I wanted to talk about that today in terms of some people who, well, one you know, two I'll tell you about, but who, when they spoke, died for it, and one whose life had to change radically. You've already heard the story about the first one, Jesus, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later. But I wanted to also tell you about Isaias and Ruth. A number of years ago, when I was working at the Uniting Church Social Justice Unit, we, Mark Sternzak and I, who you might be familiar with, went to the Philippines. We went on a solidarity visit. So we were supporting the church members, but there were also like union representatives and other international people coming through, joining the visit. And the aim was to pay attention or give attention to what was happening at the time, which was some alarming extrajudicial murders of people who were speaking out about human rights in the Philippines. And our partner church had a number of ministers and youth leaders who were being killed for what they were saying. So what it basically involved was visiting the sites of where people had been murdered. I somewhat jokingly called it the murder tour, but that's in jest really, because as the week went on, I was becoming much more familiar with extraordinary experiences. And in the Philippines at the time, it's a very different culture in the way they show images. Now, thankfully, I didn't put any up for you, because in our culture we wouldn't do that. But they would openly display and very largely the images of bodies that had been shot. And I know I'm being a bit strong, but I'll get happier later. It was very confronting. So you could go to this space in town, and if there was people bringing awareness to it, you would see images that you would not see in Australia. So you couldn't really look aside. It was like, this is not the movies. This is real. And Isaias Drummond Minano was 23 when he was gunned down in the street as a young person. He was active in social justice and human rights. And one of the sites we went to, his fiancée and his mother had joined with us. And I remember her falling to the ground just where he had died. Perhaps somewhat selfishly, I wanted to know what his death meant to his mother. Having chosen to do that work with real consequences. So I had the privilege of spending some time with her, and there were tears. But I remember very vividly she said to me, I could not have stopped him even if I'd wanted to. He was passionate about human rights and social justice. And as we hugged goodbye, and I remember thinking to myself, I basically do that job in Australia, but not with the consequence of being murdered for it. So it was very challenging to think about, would I do that? Would I speak out if those were the consequences? I still don't know the answer to that. I think it's contextual. But it was very challenging. But I had one more final challenge, and that was on the final night, we had a big dinner, and I was sitting next to a woman. I didn't know who she was, and it might have been good if someone had given me the heads up, because it turns out she was quite a prominent activist who'd come out of hiding just for that dinner. And so my rather awkward kind of trying to talk about normal things wasn't appropriate. So clearly I clued on and shut up and asked her some questions. She was palpably nervous. Like this was a risk for her to even come to this dinner. And of course, so many other people wanted to talk to her that I really didn't get much time with her. But it was again just that feeling of the risk that you're taking to even be here with us. And it was an extraordinary time of having the privilege of that experience, but also the sadness and understanding of what people do to risk speaking out, that we don't have to. And so the other person I wanted to talk about who spoke out and got into trouble is a man called Jesus of Nazareth. The reading this morning from the Philippians talks about Jesus being obedient, and I take umbrage with that, actually. I think to a large degree, Jesus was, in his cultural time, an extraordinary radical. So to claim that Jesus was a radical is that he was radically out of place according to the social experience of both the Jewish and the Greco-Roman society. And being out of place in a shared cultural way, which is different to our individualistic way, has severe consequences, because you have an impact on everybody in your behaviour. And so he embodied new social patterns of relationships that were governed, as we know from the stories, by service and humility, dispersal of surplus possessions, concern for the outsiders of the community, including the poor and Gentiles, extremely radical in the social context, But he also refused to defer to or cooperate with the officials, not just the Pharisees, but also the wider Greco-Roman culture. And we heard a little bit of that in the reading this morning. So some of the examples of being a bit of a radical and speaking out and doing actions that will get you into trouble within that context. He had, you'll remember from stories, the accusation that Jesus eats with tax collectors and sinners and gives deference to women, oh my goodness, and children. That there's a claim of him being a glutton and a drunkard. And in a Jewish context, table fellowship was reflective of God. And so in sharing the table with sinners, Jesus was profane in the blessing of God. He challenged the dominant culture that was honour and shame, a different way of that we have in a collective society, by having social relationships with people of a different class, the poor, again, women. And there are examples of him ignoring some of the purity codes that we hear in the stories in the Gospels. There's an argument that's been used against the suggestion that he was a social radical. But in the time of the first century Mediterranean world, there were no clear distinctions between social, political, economic, religious spheres of life. They were all connected. And so to do or to be profane in one area was to do it in every area in that sense. And the social order was considered to be ordained by God. So in lots of ways, there was a perception that he was actually being profane against God for some, certainly the Pharisees. So I know that there's a lot of other ways for us to see Jesus Christ as the Son of God. And however we want to interpret those in a spiritual or faith way, there's no question that in his time he was a rebel. He was a radical and he died for it in lots of ways, for what he said and what he did. So my challenge for you this week is to get into a little bit of trouble. Not a lot. We want you back here next week. But if you hear racism or you hear discrimination, speak. Don't be silent. If you can. It's scary, I know, and many of you may do it already. But as we move towards Good Friday, I think it's one of the lessons that Jesus of Nazareth as a man in that community taught us. And so let's take up the challenge. Thanks be to God.